Hello and welcome. You're listening to The Broadband Exchange, the podcast from your friends at Telecompetitor. I'm Ian Desher, Pivot's Director of Media and Story, and Managing Editor of Telecompetitor. It's time to review this week's broadband news. Let's get into it. We'll begin in California, where the state's final BEAD proposal received approval from the NTIA. That made California the 49th state to reach this stage of the federal program. The approval followed the California Public Utility Commission's submission of its final proposal last December. The approval was an important milestone, but it doesn't close the book entirely, of course. The CPUC says it plans to publish a resolution describing revisions made since the original proposal was submitted. That resolution will be released for public comment and could reach a commission vote as soon as September 17th. The approval moves California closer to turning preliminary selections into funded deployment projects. It also shifts more attention toward grant agreements, compliance requirements, construction schedules, and the other local steps that have to happen. Now only Illinois remains to have their final BEAD proposal approved. Sticking with California, the state also approved more than $74 million through the California Advanced Services Fund. The funding will support six fiber projects reaching nearly 1,800 unserved homes and businesses across seven counties. SurfNet Communications received the largest award with up to $33.2 million to reach 1,293 locations in Monterey, San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, Santa Clara, and Santa Cruz counties. Y-Conduit and Gigabit Now were awarded up to $32.4 million for 341 locations in Sonoma County. Hankins Information Technology received up to $8.5 million for 154 locations in Marin County. Several of the projects will serve communities in or near high fire threat areas, giving the builds an emergency communications and resiliency dimension in addition to the basic connectivity. Moving to Washington, D.C., the Senate passed legislation that could lead to another review of the national broadband map. The Map for Broadband Funding Act would direct the FCC and the NTIA to study whether federal broadband data is complete, current, and useful enough to guide funding. The bill calls for an FCC inquiry into the collection and usability of broadband data, the timing of updates, and whether the map should incorporate additional information or third-party tools. It also would require the Government Accountability Office to review how federal agencies divide mapping responsibilities and how much progress they've made. The legislation now moves to the House, where there's already a companion bill waiting. A separate Senate committee advanced the Accelerating Broadband Permits Act. That bill would establish a dashboard to track federal permit requirements and the progress of BEAD-funded projects. It would also require analysis of the factors causing delays and make more program data publicly available. Supporters, two of the early ones being the NTCA and Pew Charitable Trusts, argued that slow and inconsistent permitting can raise deployment costs and make it harder for providers to meet construction deadlines. The bill still has a long way to go, but permitting reform continues to attract attention, especially as the industry shifts from planning BEAD projects to actually building them. The FCC, meanwhile, had lots of news last week. First, the commission announced that it will consider a broad review of Universal Service Fund Administration at its August 6th meeting. The proposed proceeding would examine current administrative processes, the role and responsibilities of the Universal Service Administrative Company, operating costs, and USAC's board structure. Chairman Brendan Carr framed the proposal as part of the top-to-bottom review he says is necessary to improve oversight, reduce administrative expenses, and increase accountability. Obviously, any review of the USF administration deserves close attention. Changes involving the USAC can affect reporting, compliance, program expenses, and the day-to-day experience of participating in high costs and other universal service programs that, of course, matter to rural broadband providers. The FCC also completed a busy July meeting last week that included broadband labels, satellite licensing, robocalls, and spectrum. On broadband labels, the commission streamlined several requirements and allowed customer service representatives to explain label information conversationally rather than just reading the label word for word. The FCC emphasized that telephone sales remain a point of sale and that customers must still be able to receive the important plan details. So providers now have a clearer picture after that meeting of what the final rules will require, although even a simplification will probably come along with updates to make. The commission also replaced its Part 25 satellite licensing framework with a new Part 100. The FCC described the revised system as a licensing assembly line intended to accelerate approvals for low Earth orbit satellite systems and other space-based networks. On robocalls, the FCC proposed additional measures involving its robocall mitigation database and the obligations of voice providers throughout the call path. The same FCC meeting last week also cleared 160 megahertz of upper C-band spectrum for auction. Chairman Carr said the auction remained on track for completion within 12 months and could attract as much as $60 billion in bids. The new spectrum sits next to previously cleared lower C-band frequencies, creating what the chairman described as a harmonized block totaling 440 megahertz. The FCC coordinated with the Federal Aviation Administration because aircraft radio altimeters operate on adjacent frequencies and will require retrofits. The commission estimated that licensees could begin operating in the upper C-band in 2030. Commissioner Ana Gomez dissented in part because the order did not include a tribal licensing window. Next, two more California stories. It was a busy week for California last week. They highlighted the difficult transition away from legacy networks, these two other stories. The first was that the Georgetown Center for Business and Public Policy filed comments supporting AT&T's request for the FCC to preempt California's carrier of last resort requirements. AT&T has argued that California shouldn't be able to require the company to maintain its legacy copper network when customers can receive voice service through fiber, cable, fixed wireless, mobile networks, or satellite. The Georgetown Center didn't take a position on the exact question at the center of this debate. Instead, it argued that the competitive market has changed enough since the monopoly era that customers generally have alternatives and that forcing continued investment in an aging POTS network could create its own harms. The unresolved concern is what happens to customers, especially in rural areas, who don't have reliable access to those alternatives. At the same time, the CPUC pressed AT&T to pause disconnections involving T1 business data circuits. Utilities and other infrastructure operators in California have complained about steep rate increases, service losses, and the possibility of future disconnections. The CPUC said T1 circuits still support real-time monitoring and operational systems used by energy, water, transportation, public safety, healthcare, and other critical organizations. The commission asked AT&T to resolve outstanding issues, avoid cutting off customers until suitable replacements are available, and submit monthly reports on affected enterprise transitions. Taken together, the POTS and T1 disputes demonstrate the central problem with retiring older technology. The industry may agree on where we're headed, but it gets complicated when legacy circuits support hard-to-replace services. In infrastructure security, a coalition of broadband industry associations reported more than 18,000 attacks on communications networks affecting over 11.8 million broadband customers during the past several years. California recorded the most incidents in 2025, followed by Texas and Missouri. The report focused heavily on copper theft and intentional damage. The associations that issued the report are calling for stronger scrap metal rules, better coordination with law enforcement, more consistent state laws, and tougher penalties. At least 23 states have introduced related legislation, and 13 have passed laws strengthening protection for communications infrastructure. A federal bill would also make willful or malicious damage to privately owned critical communications infrastructure a criminal offense, and that's something the associations are hoping for. Finally, two Ookla reports examined wireless performance from different angles. In Ookla's speed test-based connectivity assessment, T-Mobile received the highest customer sentiment score and ranked first for overall mobile network experience. It also led in the report's download speed, consistency, video streaming, and gaming measurements. Verizon ranked first in geographic coverage and had the highest 5G availability within its network footprint. A separate RootMetrics-based report found that all three major carriers continued to improve. AT&T tied Verizon for overall performance and reliability, while Verizon led in responsiveness, data performance, and video performance. T-Mobile continued to post the fastest aggregate national download speed. The results of the two reports weren't identical because the reports used different methodologies and emphasized different aspects of the customer experience. The broader message was more consistent, though. AT&T, T-Mobile, and Verizon continue to invest heavily and each have areas where it can claim an advantage. For consumers, that means the answer to which network is best still depends on location and the experience being measured. For the industry, the reports show how quickly performance goalposts keep moving as carriers add spectrum, upgrade their 5G architectures, and refine existing networks. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening to the Broadband Exchange. You can read all the articles we mentioned today at telecompetitor.com. Feel free to drop us a line while you're there. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next time.